This is Gloria Moraga's One-on-One, a show designed to improve face-to-face communication in the digital age.
I moved back to California in 1995 to report at the ABC affiliate in Sacramento. I left my beloved Capitol Hill to cover politics and the state capitol. To say I suffered political shock is putting it mildly. Even though Sacramento is the capital of California, folks here did not live, eat, breathe politics like those in my adopted hometown, Washington, D.C. My goal always was to put real people in all of my stories. What people will the budget help or hurt? Who is behind this legislation? Who is for or against, and why? When I needed an analyst for one of my stories, I met communications professor Barbara O'Connor. It's safe to say, Professor O'Connor was, probably for as long as three decades, the political soundbite queen in California. When I was thinking about this podcast, One-on-One, Communications in the Digital Age, I naturally thought of Barbara. We sat down at Capital Public Radio. Professor O'Connor is one of the founders of the station, and she remains on the board of directors. She's also served on the board of directors of the National AARP. Because of her high level of involvement in so many organizations, I asked her what title we should use for One-on-One.
Well, I'm a retired professor of communications, and stress on the communications, because as I get older, I think more and more about how to get people together. And so communications is the key to that. And I studied it as an academic. I taught it as a professor at three institutions. And I really believe that retirement is the perfect place for it.
And so, as we head into the third decade of the new millennium, what does Barbara O'Connor think about communications today?
People don't communicate. You know, the younger generations are all hooked up on their phones, and or they're doing YouTube videos, or they're playing video games, and they don't talk at all to the people in their house. We built neighborhoods where you don't talk to your neighbors because we would go behind a door, shut the door. If you're in the third world, you have no resources and you're constantly in fear. So communications is a way out of all of those dilemmas. And I find that if I bother to talk to people, and I would talk to a rock, of course, if I talk to them, I get to know them and they get to know me. And that's the first step to solving any problem.
How does one person establish communications with another?
It really is, you know, almost what we call in college a balance theory, where you don't dominate, you listen. And we're all used to trying to dominate, and we're used to having our own values permeate everything we do. And increasingly in a diverse society, as a teacher, as a whatever you are, you're dealing with people who are not like you. And so you got to figure out who they are.
Okay, communications professor emeritus Barbara O'Connor, give us some advice. We need tips.
90% of it is nonverbal, and they need to know that. Most people don't know it. And so that's your eyes, your face, your voice, and sort of a willingness, being open about listening to who they are. They don't feel heard. And so the first step is always you finding out about them, but in a very friendly, not interrogative way, showing that you really care about who they are, and you do that with your eyes. 90% of it is nonverbal. So when we react to people we don't like on television, it's largely their nonverbal, if you pay attention to it, not what they're saying, with the exception of our president. He's totally out of sync. You know, his nonverbal when he's speaking doesn't match his verbal. And I think that's jarring to people. They don't know what it is, but that's part of what it is. And that's part of what it is in dealing with any person. Your nonverbal does have to match your verbal. And 90% of what people take away is the nonverbal, not what you're saying.
If President Trump gets bad body language grades from Professor O'Connor, who gets an A? I was a little surprised when she said it's Pepper Potts. Well, not the real Pepper Potts, the actress who plays her alongside Robert Downey Jr.
Well, I watched one this morning, Gwyneth Paltrow, who's not my age, who's an actress, who's very privileged, and she was talking about her own brand and why she embraces the Goop brand. I'm not her target audience. I mean, it's mostly millennial or Gen Xers. And she was so compelling that I want to go now and research what she's doing and get more data on it. And it's because she was really relaxed and talking about giving up all that she was before to interact with people in a way that helped them. And it was nonverbal. A lot of it was nonverbal. She had compelling eyes. You know, she was genuinely interested in producing things that people needed. And she's not a nutty actress who comes from very famous parents, which was my read of her before. And I think that's true every time you talk to somebody, when you talk to your neighbor, when you talk to your minister.
Give us an example of good nonverbal and verbal communications.
Martin Luther King is so revered because he had the wonderful voice, the great eyes. You would listen to what he had to say even if you disagreed with him. It was a booming, wonderful, melodic pastor's voice, and people loved him. That's kind of what you want in somebody, somebody who's willing to be honest about their own beliefs and compelling in the way they describe them to you. If you talk with your hands, use your hands. That's part of the nonverbal. Your eyes, your face, your voice. And you can teach people that. I've done it for years, usually with politicians who need help. And my standard for picking somebody is, are they a good person? And I think you can teach anybody to be a good communicator as long as they have good values.
What do we do to get folks out of their phones?
Well, you join them, number one, figure out what they're doing. I've learned more from our 9-year-old because he's on his phone all the time and he's producing YouTube videos. So I've helped him, I've watched him, and then we have rules about he has to take time to do what I do. And you're very straightforward about it. It's not, you don't collect, with kids it's easy. You say you got 2 hours a day, you can use them as you want. The rest of the time you're gonna interact. And that's helping everyone with their children. With adults it's a little harder. With millennials it's a little harder. With Gen Xers it's really hard because they are digital natives. So I think part of it is a willingness to not put down what they're doing. Acknowledge what they're doing. For instance, last Thursday it was 50 degrees in Sacramento and raining, and our 9-year-old wanted to produce a YouTube video of him jumping in an unheated pool. And I said, boy, are you nuts, you know? And he said, I really need to do this. Will you take the camera and shoot the video? Of course I did. And he really hated getting into the pool. It helps to know why somebody's doing it. His motivation was genuine. I could go outside easily and take the picture, and he underestimated how cold it was. Because the picture when he got out of the pool was stellar. It was great. That's what he wanted. So I think part of it is getting to know what motivates people and not trying to make them you. You have to acknowledge who they are. And that's intergenerational. I mean, it's true of older people. I went, for example, when the last election in the fall, I went to nursing homes because there were a whole bunch of people there who had ballots because older people vote. And nobody wanted to talk to them about their ballots. So they didn't fill them out. They were just sitting there. So 2 days, I have a friend at one of them. 2 days before the election, the administrator said, do you mind sitting in the eating room and helping people fill out their ballots? I said, not at all. They came down in wheelchairs. They came down on walkers. They were Republicans. They were Democrats. Didn't matter. They lay in bed all day and watch PSAs. They watch political ads. They're very engaged and have opinions about what's going on. Let them talk about it. Encourage them to talk about it. We were there 2 hours. I delivered like 100 ballots. You know, I provided stamps if people wanted stamps. And if they voted Republican, they went in Republican. That's an illustration, I think, of how we can help people fulfill what they need to fulfill. But it's that whole notion of a village is interdependent. And I think we've lost that. And so that's really the way I view the world. And I do it in everything I do. And it's a village. We live in a village. And, you know, people put Hillary Clinton down for saying it's a village, but it's a village. And you need to make sure that you acknowledge all of the values. It's beliefs, attitudes, and values is really what we're talking about. It's old Rokeach theory from college. And I don't dismiss your values. I tell you what mine are, and we talk about them, and we come to an agreement of a different set. And it's based on evidence, and it's based on, you know, knowledge, and it's shared. So the minute I learn something from somebody young, I start to store it and think of them differently. The minute they learn something from me, they store it and make their lives different. And that's the way it works. I really believe in balance theory or behavior theory. Skinner's true. And I live the world that way. And I find I'm much happier doing that. And I've always done it. I do it better now than I did because I'm older and I've had more experiences and have different goals. I mean, I'm now not giving A's, B's, C's, and D's and F's. I am trying to provide a lifestyle that's interactive. That's really what I do. And I think people are good. I believe most people are good. And if you get them together, they will find a way to be good to each other.
What's your thought about the crazy political landscape in journalism?
Journalists have really gone downhill, and not of their own doing, because they keep getting laid off and downsized, and they're doing different kinds of journalism, they're doing different kinds of things. But the good journalist does his or her research on who they're dealing with and what the landscape is like. And so for me, I say in the 2022 election, or 2020 election, the presidential election, you want somebody that everybody can support. That's not bipolar. It's not old. It is value driven. And so for me, at least, I'm working for younger candidates of minorities, usually, who have been in important positions and are in the middle of the country. And they are women, they are Hispanic, and one is black. Now, whether or not they end up winning is irrelevant to me. I mean, I think the process of going through the election will be healing. It's bipolar. We have all the problems of it being mean, and we can cure some of that. We can really cure it. I'm liking that they're having the forums earlier. They're moving from Texas to Ohio, all over the country. The polarization of Fox and CNN is illustrative of deeply different values. And if you can get people to acknowledge that and make sure that they frame theirs around a more balanced set of perspectives, journalists can do that. They have to work at it, and they are underpaid and they're overworked and there are less of them. But there are good ones out there.
Is it research?
It's research. It's knowing everything that you can find about the people you're interviewing and not going for the one-liner gotcha. It's a deeper level of questioning. And then you frame answers around that, and you pick people around that. And I think that we do a disservice when we don't acknowledge that young journalists have the same passion that we all had when we were 21. They demonstrate it differently. You know, I founded public radio in Sacramento. I've done things that were my way of doing that. They're using the digital technology. They're doing all kinds of things. They're multimedia journalists, and that's what this next generation needs. And we have to provide for them. And I'm delighted that the Times is hiring younger people, both Times, New York Times and LA Times. Sacramento Bee's trying to with limited resources. But these people are well-trained. They just need to be supported. And it's a different world out there. We don't have the same number of channels we used to have.
And how important is it for the older journalists to teach?
Oh, I think it's real important because that's what they need to know. But the older journalists need to know what they do too. So it's a two-way street. You know what you know about traditional questioning and the whole culture of news. I do too. And I went to one of the best schools in the country. Annenberg was a great training ground. But the world has changed. And so journalists who try to teach as if it hasn't changed, they do a disservice, I think. Yes, they have the wisdom and the experience and the anecdotal information, but they need to learn the new technologies. And I'm really funny when I go to the Hacker Lab, which is the place where that collision happens often. They're old Intel engineers who are retired, largely white males, who are teaching all these tattooed and pierced 16, 18, 20-year-olds, and they share. And so I learned 3D printing in that environment, where I went in with my set of values and learned it from their set of values. And that's what you want to do in every encounter you have, and acknowledge what you don't know. And I admire anybody who is trying to do that. I luckily met the Dalai Lama with Maria Shriver when she was First Lady in Long Beach at a conference. And we hit it off. We kept running into each other. And so I'm not one to kind of acknowledge the environment exists that I have no control over, because I like to control things. But I kept running into him. We've connected. And I think that's the word that matters to me. You connect and you acknowledge and you let people be who they are, and you treasure them for who they are, but you have things that you share in common.
I think connect is a great word for these times.
Yeah, and we don't do it unless we make an effort, so.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Join me next week. One-on-One welcomes Alan Miller, the outspoken former editorial writer, now teaches communications. You never know what Mr. Miller is going to say from moment to moment. He has strong opinions about journalism, media, and of course, comms in 2019. You don't want to miss him. Our voiceover introduction was provided by Joseph Garcia. The music was Bay Breeze by 4033. From YouTube, of course. I've attached the links. And Gloria Moraga, portions of this interview with Dr. Barbara O'Connor are available on my YouTube channel. Please subscribe.